Now, you know, I've been raving all day about our superstar coming into our bistro today. I am delighted to welcome multi-award-winning composer George Fenton to U105. Hello, George.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well. Thank
good,
you.
Good.
Thank
you've
you
just come off a plane. Right, you've just literally arrived into Northern Ireland.
Into Belfast, yeah.
You picked a good day, I'll
tell
you.
Yeah, I have. It's a bit windy.
What was the flight like? Was it okay?
A little bit windy. but the lovely day.
Normally it's lashing. Normally it's just rain and it's freezing. Right. And today the temperatures aren't too bad. The sun's shining. It's good. Have you had something to eat?
Yes.
Oh, you've eaten?
Yes.
I'll tell you why I'm asking.
Oh, you've got something for me?
I did.
Oh, how nice.
I brought something
Thank
lovely
you.
For you. Well, I have to be honest, I did not bring it in, but I will share
Let's
it with
see.
You. I had one of Northern Ireland's finest chefs with us today, just before you arrived.
Oh, right.
His name's Niall McKenna, and he has a restaurant called James Street South. And we were talking about wheaten bread and things that you can do with wheaten bread, and he brought in some smoked salmon on wheaten bread.
Great.
And I started a 5-2 diet today, George.
Oh, really?
So I can't eat it. So as much as I want to eat it, so
well I'll eat it.
You can,
but not while I'm talking.
No, not while you're talking. But
okay,
I'm
okay.
Leave it there
but it
for
looks
you.
Good.
So you can have it. I wanted to feed you whenever you come in. Some people asking me earlier because they didn't know your name. They said George Fenton. Who is George Fenton? And I said, well, let's play a piece of music. So what I did was I got together some of the music you've done. There's so much, George, but I thought we'd give them a flavour of who George Fenton is. Listen to this. You know why we introduced him as the superstar composer. My goodness, you've done so many things, George. Is it difficult for you to remember?
You played nearly all of them.
Is it difficult for you to listen
to quite
I watched you trying to spot them.
Yeah, a couple of them I couldn't.
Well, I'll give you the list then.
Go on, then.
Mrs. Henderson presents Groundhog Day, Anna and the King, Mary Riley, Ever After and Shadowlands.
Right.
So there you go.
Thank you very much.
You've done so many that you couldn't even recognise your own work. Isn't that amazing? That's something else. How do you start? Where do you begin to compose a score? What's the beginning of the process?
Well, no, actually, normally it's the finished film, and normally the music's the last thing in. So I get it may not be fine cut, but at least an assembly or a rough cut of the finished film, and you go from there. Really, you sit down with the filmmaker and say where you're going to put the music and what the music needs to do. Sometimes the music is there to sort of illuminate things that aren't necessarily in the picture. If you just watch it dry, may not be there. And so you kind of identify those things, and then you go away and panic in a room on your own for a few weeks and come up with hopefully something that they like. You know, that's all there is to it. I mean, I find the film a tremendous help because it releases you. You know, when you play all the stuff, it's nice to hear like that. You play it all, and it's quite a mixed bag of things. No, someone in here dropped something, but it wasn't
it's
me.
All right. It's okay. But, it's not broken.
And I think that's one of the nice things about doing film music, because for the composer in film music, you don't have the agony of the who am I in music conversation with yourself every time you write, because the film speaks to you in a way, so you just respond.
It directs you
to like contemporary music or pop music, or you know, music from a particular culture or period or something, you know what I mean? There's lots of little signals.
Do you have arguments with yourself about the music? When are you ever really happy that, because a lot of us, whenever we're doing anything, you think, oh, I could do it better.
Yeah.
Or maybe I could change that. At what point do you have to say, right, it's done?
Well, I don't think, I think you do get very, you never finish anything and say, oh, that's it, you know, because in a way, you're so deeply into it that you have a sort of forensic look. You know, you can see everything that's wrong all the time. But I think that when you start on a film, you know quite quickly whether the idea that you have for the music has got any legs, you know, mm-hmm. because if it hasn't, it won't resonate through the film. So when it, you know, you can sometimes think, oh, this is great, this looks great at the front, but you then have to develop the idea musically through the film, and if it won't develop, you have to go back and mm-hmm. start again.
So the music should take you on the journey with the movie, but it shouldn't be intrusive. It shouldn't be.
No.
Out the front. It should be somewhere in the background that you know it's there. But
it does more than you think it does. Mm. I mean, it's quite interesting if you take it off and watch the film.
Because we were talking about that earlier. We're saying that whenever you watch a scary movie.
If you turn the sound off.
Yeah, it's not as frightening.
No.
But
no.
Most people, like Rachel said to me, most people will cover their eyes when they're watching a scary movie if it's scary. But what you should do is cover your ears.
Exactly, yeah.
So that you don't, because it's the music that really does the freaky stuff in the background, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think, a lot of the time, you know, it makes you focus sometimes on what people are saying in a way that it highlights one person's, say, if I'm talking to you in a film, you know, where the music starts. If I say we're chatting and then you say something and the music starts just before you say it, mm-hmm. it will lift up what you're saying for mm-hmm. the audience, so they'll pay more attention to it. Things like mm-hmm. there are little things like that, you know.
At what point? What was the? Can you remember the first time that you wrote a score for TV or film? The first time you actually.
I haven't completed.
Can you remember what that was like? You know, because your first
well,
time
I
you
can,
do that.
Yes, I can. I mean. The thing is, I didn't really, you know, I sort of fell into it more than I didn't sort of dream of doing it as a kid and then suddenly got my chance. It wasn't like that. I had a, you know, I used to play for a living, and then I did a few arrangements of something, and then I did a bit of music in the theatre, and then I did a bit of something. And so I just sort of found myself in a TV studio recording a score. And I'll never forget it because it was for a play called Hitting Town. And I was quite excited because I'd been given the job. And I called the head of music at the television company and I said to her, listen, I'm writing the music for this thing and I've been told to call you. And she said, yes, that's right. And I said, I just wanted to check, how do I do this, like booking musicians and things? And how? And she said, well, you have to tell me. And I said, well, how many musicians can I have? And she said, one. And I said, one? And she said, do you play anything? I said, well, I can play a bit of piano and things. She said, well, then two.
So
that was it. So I did a score for two, me and one player, because that was all they had the money for.
That's obviously why you laughed whenever I said, can you remember? You'll never forget
it. Yeah, I won't forget that. And actually, I can remember the player, a wonderful saxophonist called Roy Willocks, who played it was all right, actually.
Yeah, do you have good memories of that? Before that happened, you were an actor as well.
Well,
I heard a rumor you were in Emmerdale. You say, and as soon as you walked
no,
in,
I was.
I looked and went, I wonder if I'll recognize him.
No. What happened was that I played in bands and things, and basically I wasn't doing very much, and my mother saw an advertisement for a public audition. And she said to me, you should go along, you may as well go along. And I went along and I got a part in the play. And so I then had to have a actor's union ticket, you know. And then, so I did a couple of things in the theatre. And one time they said that they were auditioning. Again, I think it was just a general audition for Emmerdale Farm. And it was what it was called then. And I couldn't make the audition in London, but I thought, since I hadn't got any work, I'd drive to Leeds. So I drove to Leeds and called them and said, look, I missed the auditions in London, but can I go? And I think really they were so grateful in those days that I'd driven to Leeds mm-hmm. that they, out of sympathy, gave me a small walk-on part.
He deserves something. He's taken.
So I was
time.
In a lot long shot, you know, like standing in a field. And then that was it. And
well,
actually,
that explains why I didn't recognise
you
from Emmerdale.
I'm
like, what part did he play in Emmerdale? So you tried a wee bit of everything before you actually got into serious.
Yeah, I mean, composing. I just play, you know, I used to play and then I did a bit of that and, you know, but I was never really, I mean, actually, funny enough, I would have loved to have been an actor because, but I could never have been one. And I think that a proper actor, and because I think it's the hardest, one of the hardest jobs. People don't realise what a difficult job it is. Mm. And the thing, you know, the thing about writing music is that at least at the end of the day, you know, you can say, well, you know, I may not be much, but I wrote that. You know, you've got some sort of
no,
like
George,
evidence.
You may
well,
not
no,
be
know,
much, but
no,
you've written no, 75
I
know,
no,
feature films.
No, I know, but like, what know. I mean is that you, that as you're going along, you know, yes. you've got something to give you some security,
yes,
haven't
of course.
You? So, and musicians have that generally because yeah. they can always play their instrument,
that's
you
right.
know.
Yeah, yeah.
But but actors have nothing like that, and I think acting, you know, the best actors are incredible, and I'm all in awe of them, actually.
Can I just ask you how difficult it is to go from one style of movie, like, for example, something like You've Got Mail, which is a fun sort of light movie, to something heavy like Gandhi? I mean, is it difficult to do both, or is just a score to score?
Well, it's different. Yes, it's not difficult to do both. I mean, in some ways, I would say that whenever you're doing if you're doing a romantic comedy, you sit there the whole time doing a romantic comedy thinking, I wish I was doing something heavy and dramatic, you know. I wish I was doing something with action. I wish, you know. And then when you're doing something that's heavy and dramatic and it's all you sit there thinking, if only I could just like, if it's just a romantic comedy. Because they are different, but, you know, but they're both like there's a lot of chore there's drudge to it.
How long does it take?
Well, you don't have very long, so it doesn't take very long. You have, like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, really, when you get started.
And
so
would that be a stressful 4 to 6 weeks?
That would be, like, an incredibly stressful... Mm. And a sort of... It's 4 to 6 weeks, generally, of days that are maybe 18 hours and 7 days a week. You know, because once you're in it, the labour involved is so intense. There's so many dots to put down on the page, and there's so many people involved and everything, you know, that it becomes incredibly intense. But you know, stress, fear, elation, you know, it's kind of not a bad equation sometimes if it works out well. So and I love being with musicians, and I love playing and all of that. So, you know, it's been brilliant for me.
Well, from all the work that you've done, like for TV, let's look at TV here.
Yeah.
What's the highlight? I mean, for you, what was the pinnacle where you just thought, well, you probably haven't got there yet. You've done so many things, you don't know what's ahead of you. But what for you, when you look at it? We sort of look at the natural life, those sort of things, and they must be brilliant.
Well, the highlight for me, in the case of that, yeah, I mean, is the footage itself. Because you spend so long looking at the film. So the footage itself is absolutely unbelievably beautiful and so easy in a way to write. Because it doesn't challenge you, as in it all works, you know. Everything works, the natural world. You don't have an actor who isn't quite doing it. You don't have a car chase that doesn't quite make it. So you're not trying to gee anything up in that way. But the highlight of the natural history things really is then when I go and play them in concert, which I've just done this weekend in Amsterdam, and we played, you know, in the frozen planet, like a concert version with a huge screen in the Ziggo Dome in Amsterdam, and 20,000 people turned.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was great.
And how often would you do something like that, George? How often would
you
do that?
I do about 7 or 8 a year, like that, around the world.
My goodness, that would be a big... Because you've got all this work in the middle of this, so do you ever sleep?
On airplanes.
Just go over maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a heck of a workload.
It's good, but now they're up and running, you know, and I kind of know them okay, then actually in a way it's like having a, you know, trip out. And the thing about writing music generally is it's quite lonely, you know, it's quite isolated. So
whenever you get out on the road, it's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, so
then.
Whenever you get the opportunity to go and meet a new orchestra.
Well, how many would be in the orchestra? Give us an idea.
Well, 85.
Wow.
On Saturday.
What's it like to conduct an orchestra like that? I mean, how difficult is that?
I don't think. I mean, the thing is, I'm not really a very good conductor. So as long as I'm,
but you conduct a full symphony orchestra, you've got to be a good
conductor.
But I'm not.
But when I'm, but the thing is that they don't like people. Generally, if you've written the music, they're generous, the musicians, and if you don't try to do too much, and they take responsibility, you get quite a nice rapport with an orchestra, and then they'll play. You know, some conductors thrive on a kind of tension between themselves and the orchestra, mm-hmm. because it can produce a sort of electrifying results. Mm-hmm. And some conductors, you know, have a sort of reputation for being, you know, kind of martinets, you know, that way. But I tend to appeal to their better nature if I can, and I hope they'll be on my side. So you know, but generally, the other thing is that I'm not going there to tell them how to play Beethoven or how to play Berlioz or something like that. I just go there, and it's like a day out for them as well. So we just
you're having fun. You're enjoying it.
Yeah, we try and have a nice time.
You're enjoying it. Yeah. And just to go back to those the TV programs, that just one wee thing that I've often heard people say, whenever you're watching something like that, and you, as you say, the natural life itself is the show. That's the show. You're watching the footage of that. How do you know when to put the music? Do you know whenever sometimes you can just go over the top? And you're like, some people will criticize that and say, look, too much music.
There are people that criticize it all the time, and they. And they have a point because
We know whenever the giraffe's dead. You know, we don't need you to give us the music to say the giraffe's lost its baby and all
it's,
of that.
It's perfectly valid that. I mean, I don't think, it's a long, we could have a very long conversation about that. The first one I did was called, the first big thing I did like this was called The Blue Planet. And Alistair Fothergill, who produced it, made a deliberate decision that he wanted me to write a score like it was an old-fashioned movie, like a big orchestral score, which is why I came back to do it, because before then I was in Hollywood nearly all the time. And I came back to do that, and people will say, well, you know, what's wrong? Why can't we just have the natural sound? And the reason you can't in the case of The Blue Planet is because there is no natural sound, because it's all underwater. Mm-hmm. So, and quite often they don't record any natural sound. So really, it's a kind of a choice. And for as many people as don't like it, nevertheless, what he did with that series was to make it into popular television. Mm-hmm. And it then became, you know, now Planet Earth, Frozen Planet, all these things. They're now big popular television, which they never were before that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's because of necessarily the music, but it's because of the approach, the David Attenborough signature, mm-hmm. the big score, that, you know, the kind of presented as though it's meant to be something for everybody. And so there are gains and probably some people would say losses, but I think also, unfortunately, you know, sometimes everybody gets it wrong.
And, you know,
get it wrong, then obviously everyone says, well, then people don't like it. Mm. But if you get it right, like you said earlier on, a lot of time people don't even notice.
That's it.
But when I do the concerts, and this is the really interesting thing, I'm not promoting one because I'm not doing one soon or anything. But
I'm thinking,
Well, but when I do the concerts, what's really interesting about that is that we don't have any commentary. We just have the pictures and the music. Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, you also realise that not only is the music, in a way, solicitous, but the commentary is solicitous, because actually, you know, there's somebody saying, this is the biggest, you know, or this is the first time we've ever, or whatever it may be. Yeah. Well, actually, if you take that away and you just put pictures up and the orchestra plays, mm-hmm. it's funny how people will then make connections. But, you know, if we play a funny scene in a natural history thing in a concert hall, like on Saturday we did, and we play it with like 11,000, they drown out the orchestra with laughter, even though nobody's telling them it's fun.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, the music tells.
So in a way, the music, it doesn't tell them to react, but it just hopefully is true to what they're seeing, and they react
compliments
on their own.
Do you know what? I could have you here all day, George. That's really great chatting to you. But I know that you're here for a reason, and you're heading to the Braid Ballymena Town Hall tomorrow evening.
Mm,
what will you be doing? Is this where we sell your... you're conducting.
No, I'm not conducting.
I know you're not doing that.
No, I'm not conducting. I'm gonna be in conversation. With Tim Burton and we're gonna talk about the films, and he's gonna show clips, and I'm gonna play little bits of early, how I'd get an early idea, you know, on the piano, mm-hmm. and then play them the full thing and things like that.
That's
so it's kind of like an in conversation.
Is it like a workshop type thing?
Well, it could turn into a workshop, I suppose. But no, it's just more like a sort of evening with, I think. I'm looking forward to it very much.
How can people get tickets for this? It's tomorrow evening. That's at the Braid Ballymena Town Hall.
Yes.
It will cost you £10 to go in. It's 8 o'clock. And
eight o'clock tomorrow. Yeah.
Can you just pay at the door? Is that okay to just pay at
Yeah.
the door? Okay, so you can just go along and pay at the door. It sounds like a fabulous evening. One more note just before we mm-hmm. finish off, George, before you have your salmon, your smoked salmon on your wheaten bread. Can I just ask you a wee bit of advice for anybody out there who's thinking that they would like to maybe get into this line of work, or maybe they already do this sort of work? How do you take it to the next level?
Well, it's a question that you always get asked, and there are courses now, like at the Royal College in London, that do film music modules. It's always easier if you go to some kind of a course, because not because you may not know what you're doing without, but it means that you'll be put in contact with people who are making short films or are at the Royal College of Art or that kind of thing. So they have kind of ways of getting you into working.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the hardest thing, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of musicians out there who are brilliant, you know, and the only problem is no one's asked them yet to do anything, mm-hmm. because it's a tough business in that way. So I think that the courses are probably now the best thing. But the most important thing is really, if you want to be a composer of anything like that, is to find someone who needs you to write. So if you find anybody putting on a theatre show, anybody making a little video, whatever it is, just do it, because it starts to build up your catalogue of work.
George Fenton, thank you so much. Lovely chatting
Thanks
to you
so
today.
Much.
I'm going to finish with a piece of music that certainly evokes memories of my childhood. Bergerac is one of the TV shows. A lot of people it's resonated with a lot of people today. So I'm going to finish up with
this
one. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
Enjoy your
lot.
Stay in Northern
Thanks
Ireland.
Thanks so much.